We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There is so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we have carved out a space just for you. The Creative Entrepreneurs Making and Selling Physical Goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is so much we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Hey friends, welcome back to Proof to Product. I'm your host, Katie Hunt. Today on the show, we have PaperCamp alumni, Jomana Siddiqui. Jomana owns and operates three businesses. She is a graphic designer and owner of Pence's Design Studio, where she does custom work, her retail website, moderneed.com, where she designs stationery, party goods, home products, logos, and printed goods for events. She's also the author of a lifestyle blog called A Happy Blog, where she shares things for a creative lifestyle like food and DIY crafts, parties, and more. On today's episode, we're talking about how she manages multiple businesses, why she chose to move her products to a fulfillment house for warehousing and shipping, and she shares her struggles with finding the right manufacturing partners. Hey, Jomana, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. So you run multiple businesses. Briefly tell us about Pence's Design Studio, Modern Eid, and A Happy Blog. What is the focus of each?
So I kind of got started with Pence's Design Studio because I do graphic design and custom stationery, and that was pretty much my beginning. As, you know, time went on in 2011, I started Pence's Design Studio, I want to say it was 2004. And in 2011, I was already creating custom stationery for a lot of clients who were asking me for custom work for like Muslim holidays, for Ramadan and Eid. So when I realized there really weren't any other companies creating products for these, I decided to start what was called Modern Eid, which was a new website that kind of had ready to buy goods that you could buy. And so that's how it came to be that I had two companies. I feel like I always have to put on a different hat every time I'm trying to shift focus on the companies. And then A Happy Blog kind of started out of my need to just, as I think with anybody who's a designer that has to work with clients, especially on custom work, you lose a little bit of yourself in the design process because you have to kind of cater to what the client wants. So I was finding that over time, I was losing the ability to be as creative as I wanted to in my work. And so I kind of started A Happy Blog, which is a lifestyle blog, just to give me a more of a creative outlet that I could put something out there and it was like totally me and it didn't have to, you know, appeal to anybody's requirements. And so that's where that started. And I started A Happy Blog in 2016.
How do you balance the time you spend on each of these three companies?
That's like a forever challenge. Luckily, so Pence's Design Studio, I want to say I would call it kind of like my day job on a day-to-day basis. That's pretty much what I'm doing is I'm doing custom work for clients. I do a lot of work in the event industry. I started out doing invitations. I no longer do that just because it was very taxing on my time and energy for one client. So I still work within the event industry, but I work more with like, say, the coordinators and stuff and creating goods for the actual day of. So that's pretty much my day-to-day. Now, Modern Eid, because it's a seasonal company, their seasonal products, I don't see very much traction on it outside of the like Ramadan or Eid holiday season. So that's pretty much how I balance it. And so what I try to do is as the Ramadan Eid season amps up, I kind of take a little bit of a step back from taking on additional clients or additional work for the Pence's side of things. And then, of course, anytime I get busy, my blogging is kind of what suffers and falls by the wayside. And so it's kind of a roller coaster. I'll have like a month or two where I'm creating a lot of content and really like, you know, focusing a lot on the blog. And then as I get busy, that will kind of drop off a little bit and it just goes back and forth.
For the blog, do you try to batch content development so that when you have less time to focus on it, you can still be posting consistently?
I do. I try to batch create content. I also, like, as part of Pence's, I do help create content for other brands and companies. So I will try to kind of look at like my calendar. I'll try to look at like a 2 month out schedule of like content that's kind of geared around the season and the holidays, like whatever's going on, if it's Christmas or whatever, and then try to marry that with maybe something that I'm already creating for another brand and do it that way. And sometimes it works great. And then sometimes, like right now, as I'm amping up for say the Ramadan season and really focused on manufacturing products and designing packaging and all that, it's kind of taken a backseat.
I think it's interesting. I mean, I think it's difficult to balance business with family, but then you're layering multi-businesses with family and a personal life and all these things. But I think it's interesting to hear how you've weaved it together and how the flow is really kind of based upon seasonality of different projects and things. And I love how you talked about, you know, how you are in control, that you can scale back on the Pence's projects when you know you have a busy season coming up for the other aspects of the businesses. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Awesome. I want to talk about your manufacturing process, because I know that you have had some hiccups along the way that others will either be able to relate to, or it will be a cautionary tale for them to take heed of. Tell us when you started, where you were manufacturing, and how that kind of evolved over time.
So when I started, I pretty much handled everything in terms of even making the product. I just kind of, I first sat down and I designed, okay, I'm going to make, say, for example, with Modern Eat, when it started, I was like, okay, I'm going to design 3 design ways, and each design way is going to have like an art print and a banner and stickers and that. And then I would go off and design the print. I would search for who's going to print it for me, which was at the time I would like just send it out to anybody, even this. I think I even used Vistaprint at some point. And then it would come back, and then I would do everything. I would cut the banners, I would put them in bags, I would make stickers, print them, put the stickers. So I handled everything at the beginning. But because it was a very small business and it was new to market, it was doable. As I grew, I realized, okay, like if I need to start producing, say, 100 of something, I need to deal with other people. Because at that time, I could make small quantities and it was fine. But as I needed to increase my quantities and make sure I had enough inventory, you know, I kind of got awakened. So I still dealt locally. I dealt with, say, a local letterpress printer that I would use for invitations. I dealt with somebody who made custom dies and die cutting and did foiling for me. Like he would then make other stuff for me. But I still, when it came down to packaging, that would still kind of fall in my lap. And it was still one of those struggles that as I tried to scale up, I would just keep running into other obstacles, and then hiring like part-time help just to package and put stickers on things. Everything for me pretty much changed when I met, I was introduced to somebody through a fellow entrepreneur friend of mine who introduced me to the idea of working with a fulfillment center. And that's when everything changed. Because up to that point, I was running everything out of my studio. I had an assistant that would help package orders, help package product. And we were just always working in the business. I couldn't focus on any marketing, any emailing, of newsletters, like nothing other than social media. And so when I, you know, got introduced to the concept of a fulfillment center, which I had no idea about at the time, it just, I just kind of moved to them. I was like, okay, so I'm going to pay them rent and they're going to hold all my product. And I literally shifted my website over to a completely different platform within 24 hours. I rebuilt my entire website so that it could integrate with their shipping. That was a turning point, I would say, in my business, because it then gave me the opportunity to, I don't have to worry about shipping product. Once everything's made, it's like no longer being stored in front of me, and I can kind of focus on other things during the season. And so that kind of opened me up to, oh, now I can talk to maybe somebody in China to make these for me, because if I do have to order 1,000, I have somewhere to put them. And so that kind of led me to branch out and do something internationally. And at that time, you know, I didn't even know where to start. So I just kind of created an account on Alibaba and just started searching for people and messaging people and just, look, I need to make this, say, banner that's foiled. Can you do it? How much will it be? How much do I have to buy? And I messaged company after company after company until I found somebody that I'm like, okay, let me try this.
Did you run samples with those companies at first just to see the quality? And
I did run samples with them. And I get the samples and I'm like, oh, wow, this is great. And the thing that really excited me was I was getting a product bagged with a label and it was literally ready to go to the shelf. Like it didn't even need to come into my hands for us to do any finishing with it. So that really excited me. And I thought like, oh, this is going to be amazing now. And I can start shifting more stuff over. So at that time, I think I was 50-50, half of the products we offered being made for us by the company that I found in China to manufacture. And they would be able to ship them directly to my fulfillment center. And then the other half were things that I still was doing locally and putting together and sending to the fulfillment center.
I want to talk about the next steps in this whole production manufacturing discussion and story, but I want to stop real quick to talk about the fulfillment. And, you know, a lot of people are hesitant to jump into fulfillment just because they don't think they're big enough. They think that, you know, I don't ship enough orders, or it's going to cost me a lot to have them pack and pull this stuff. Or, you know, there's a lot of stories we tell ourselves in this. Did you worry about those kind of things? Did you worry that you wouldn't have the volume to sustain it, or that it wouldn't be worthwhile? Or did you look at it as truly an opportunity to take something very large off your plate and give it to somebody that knew how to do this way better than you did?
100% what you said. I was totally scared. And like I said, Modern Eid is a seasonal company. So if you look at the year, I would say Modern Eid maybe does business 3 months out of the year, 3.5 months if I'm lucky. So was it worth it for me to store my products for 12 months and pay to store my products for 12 months to just only do business for 3? I generally am a very conservative person when it comes to my business. I don't invest in a ton of inventory because I'm always nervous I can't move it. But I just kind of took that risk. And I thought, like, I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't calculate like all of the numbers. What I should have done was sat down and be like, okay, how much am I paying my assistant? How much am I charging for this? Like, at the end of the day, what does it really cost me to try to do all of this myself? But I looked at it like, this would free me up in time. And it would give me the opportunity to expand the business to a point where it doesn't matter that I'm not selling outside of the 3 months, because I can now market. And those 3 months will do enough for me for the year. So luckily, because my products were stationary products, I'm not storing large items. I didn't require as much shelf space. So my monthly overhead in terms of what I just pay them to keep my items there was not very high. So it kind of gave me that like green light, like, okay, you know, I don't have to pay thousands of dollars a month to store my items. So let's just try this for a year and see how it goes. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, you know, and I'll just bring all my stuff back. But luckily, it worked.
Totally.
Yeah, it's working.
It's working for you. For those that aren't familiar, you're essentially paying by the square foot of space that you're renting there, right? And you have a monthly fee per month. What are the fees associated with it?
The fees associated with it, and like I said, I've only interacted with one company and they're the ones who are doing it for me. So I did not spend time researching. I was like, this is the guy, this is who I'm going with, let's do it. But so the fees associated with it for me are you're paying monthly, which is essentially like a rent to house your goods, which is going to be calculated based on how much space your goods actually take. Then on top of that, they integrate with my online e-commerce. And as I had mentioned before, I had to change over my website because I was operating on a platform that they couldn't really work with. But they integrate. I use Shopify to handle my e-commerce. So when an order comes in on our website, they immediately get it. I don't need to email anybody. They immediately get it, and then they will charge a packaging fee for putting the order together, which is pretty minimal. And then, of course, they will print the labels, and then they will charge me for whatever that shipping was. The additional costs, I guess, would be the rent and the fee that I pay for them to actually package the order.
Right. But as you said, it reduced the cost of having your assistant. It reduced the amount of storage you were doing in your home, or, you know, wherever, in your studio, whatever you were doing there.
I was able to condense down my studio. I needed like warehouse space before to store my products. And now that I don't need that warehouse space, I just needed my studio where I actually operated and not necessarily storage. So I looked at it like that, especially when we got really busy. I mean, I might have to bring in 2, 3, maybe 4 people to help with packaging, shipping, buying cardboard boxes. I mean, if you really think about it, like buying labels, cardboard boxes, packing tape, like all of that are costs that I don't have to worry about anymore. So I looked at it as it was worth the investment. You know, it's definitely worth the investment. I think it's definitely worth if you're a business that, you know, operates with a product and the logistics of that product for you are a big hangup, it's definitely worth doing. My only thing is I kind of wish my fulfillment center is not local in California where I am. So that's the only thing is I wish I could be able to just drop in or take over new products there. But they're really great. If I ever even have to ship something, because they have such amazing rates for shipping, because that's what they do, they'll just shoot me a label. I'm like, hey, I need to ship something from here to you. And they're like, here's a label, which at a rate that I could never get. So the benefits, I think, far outweigh the costs. You know, if my business, I kind of looked at it like if my business can't sustain the rent to store the product and somebody to actually ship my orders, then I need to reevaluate having this business, you know, as opposed to this expense.
Absolutely. No, I love how you framed it. And I love how you did your analysis of what made sense for you. But as I mentioned, I think there's just a lot of fear and hangups that a lot of people have of,
there is,
am I ready for this? And am I not? But I will tell you too, everyone I've talked to that's moved to fulfillment has said it changed their life. So I'm not saying it's for everybody, but if your business is at a point where you're shipping regularly, and to your point, it does create a pain point for your company, then it is something you should look into. Let's shift back to your manufacturing story. So at this point, then you were working with some factories in China. Was that going well? Were they doing everything or just the packaging for you?
They were doing everything. They were, you know, they were making the product and packaging it. I think with anything, one of some of the biggest hangups, of course, were communication. Was trying to get, you know, really be able to communicate through just typing these emails and hoping that it was being understood on the other end. For the most part, it was going fine. And I kind of sustained that way with the products, and it kept waking, you know, allowing me to add a new product that maybe I wouldn't have been able to add before, because now there's a manufacturing capability that I didn't have before, which was great. As I saw the landscape around me change, and so mind you, in 2011, for the holidays that we were creating products specific for, there were not many companies out there. So there was a huge kind of vacuum in the market for this type of product that was done in the way that I was doing it. So with that being said, as the landscape changed, you know, when you have somebody who first kind of comes in with it, you almost serve as like the model for new businesses on how they're going to do it. So as I saw that happening, I guess you could call them my competitors increasing, I started noticing that a lot of my products were almost looked identical to what they were putting out there. And I think the thing that kind of made me want to take a step back from manufacturing in China is I started seeing my exact products out there. I knew enough at that point that these were things that they were obviously getting in China just because of the price point that they're selling it at and the quantities and the, you know, when I know that you're dealing within the wholesale and what you're putting out there and what you're selling it, I can tell where you're making it. Because I've been around long enough to know that. And so when I start realizing, like, I wonder if they're working with my same manufacturer. And then the tipping point for me was I started seeing my photos on sites like Alibaba Express pulled from my website with other products photoshopped on top of them. And that started making me think that I kind of brought these new ideas and new products out. And as the demand started increasing for it from other companies, I didn't feel comfortable that my designs were being protected. So that kind of made me want to take a step back and say, because I've always prided the modern Eid aspect, pretty much everything, every product I've put out there, I've always prided on the fact that it's not something that's being replicated from something else I've seen. I try to make it as unique as possible and completely my design. So when I now put out a banner that looks like 10 other companies' banners, because we are using similar manufacturers or their manufacturer is taking the pictures from this one on Alibaba, then I'm like, that's not differentiating me in the marketplace. And that's pretty much my entire mission, is to be unique and different, hence the name Modern Eid.
Well, what was your process then for finding new manufacturers? You realized these problems were happening. Did you at that point want to bring it back to the States? Did you want to still look for people overseas that could do, you know, soup to nuts, everything, the packaging, the product, all of it?
I did want to bring it back to the States. Obviously, the main attraction for working with manufacturers in China is a price point, is you can create a large quantity of items for a very low price, even with shipping costs involved. and be able to sell it at what the market rate for that type of product would be. I basically had to make a decision of what is more important to me. Is it that I can sell these items cheap, or that I can sell items that are uniquely me and are not going to be stolen by the manufacturer? I was lucky in the sense that I was already working with a company in India who supplied me the specialty papers, which is pretty much where all of these like unique papers are made. A lot of them are made in India, the hand blocking and like those embossed papers. And so they were my paper supplier when I was in the invitation business. And so I kind of just started throwing the idea out there. Like when I noticed, for example, he was laser cutting and I was working with somebody in the States to laser cut. I'm like, hey, I have this product that was being made here. And then I have this other product that I was making in China. Would this be something you could do? I mean, I just kind of posed the question and threw it out there. And they were like, yeah, we could totally do that. And that's kind of like how it was born. It wasn't necessarily finding somebody who was already making what I needed. It was finding somebody who could tailor their operation to what I needed.
I love that you had a conversation with people you were already working with, that you already had a relationship with, that you trusted, because that was one of the main reasons you were moving, lack of trust.
It was lack of trust. And even if it wasn't necessarily to say that the exact manufacturer in China I was working with did anything, but you're in an environment, you're on this competitive website, say Alibaba, where if you have a product or you're showing a product that you've made, now you have all these other people who have seen that and are going to take that and take those pictures. And the fact that my pictures were being disseminated across multiple companies, not just one, gave me just the indication that that's just the way business is done. And I just didn't want to be a part of that.
I get that. So you have partnerships with Macy's, Saks Fifth Avenue, and Walmart. How did these partnerships come about? Did you approach them or did they approach you?
The first partnership with Macy's was just for like a particular store. They approached me and it was really coming from almost an employee level where, you know, again, we were producing products for holidays that didn't have companies out there making products for them. And I guess that caught the attention of somebody working there. And they're like, hey, you know, we've got a lot of customers, a lot of tourists who come in, you know, during this time, and we would love to cater to them. Can we just get some decor for our store? And I was like, let's take it a step further and just really make it like an event for your store. And that was how the first partnership with Macy's happened, is we just created and helped work with them to create an in-store event that was just like a Ramadan party, designed some, you know, store signage and things. And that was it. It wasn't necessarily that they were buying our product. It was more just for me. It was for brand recognition and achieving this goal of like, hey, if we can get an American retailer to recognize a holiday that no American retailers have ever really recognized, that could open the door for an American retailer to carry a product like this. And that's where that partnership came from, which then led to working with Saks Fifth Avenue on a very similar goal. After attending paper camp, which I did because I wanted to go to the New York Stationery Show. And I did go to the New York Stationery Show and I showed there. At the show, I met a representative from Jet.com, which had just kind of gotten started that year. And she came in my booth and I wasn't showing any of the Modern Me products at the stationery show. It was simply Pence's Design Studio, showing my line of like birthday and celebrate and things like that. And she's like, we wanted to add a home division on Jet.com and I really like some of your stuff. And so when I reached back out to her after New York, I kind of pitched her some of the holiday stuff. So I said, look, I know you came to my shop, my booth for this, and here's my catalog, but I also wanted to show you that we also have a catalog for this, which is the exact same stuff, but just done with a different sentiment. And said, you know, I think this might do really well for you. It's something that's not really readily available. So you'd kind of be, you know, putting something out there that's rare for people. And they placed an order. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Yay! All that trouble is worth it. They placed an order. Yeah. And honestly, I would not have been able, like, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on your podcast, I would not have been able to go to the New York Stationery Show if I did not attend paper camp. I would not have known what to do, how to do it, literally nothing. And so, you know, I felt like each of these different things were like just little stepping stones. And for me, the process has been slow going. You know, I've been doing this since, say, 2011 with this company. I feel like I should have gone further than I have, but I'm also battling an obstacle of putting a product out there that isn't kind of readily available and is bringing education.
You're paving the way. You're paving the way for a new segment, you know?
So Jet.com got purchased by Walmart a year later, which I didn't know. But then when I realized, hey, why is my stuff on Walmart.com? I pieced it together, and that led to last year a representative from Walmart Canada calling me and saying, hey, I noticed you had some products on Walmart.com. How did that come to be? And I kind of spoke to her. She was a buyer. And then she was like, I want to put that on Canada, you know, Walmart Canada. And so that's how that kind of came up. And I got a direct PO from Walmart. At the same time, I kind of applied. Macy's was doing a program where they were allowing kind of small business owners who had products to kind of pitch to them for this program that they called Market at Macy's, where you would have like a section in their store. And I did, and they went for it. And that's how that came to be. So all of that kind of happened at the same time.
It sounds like a mix of you being proactive, good, right opportunity at the right time, you know, the connections you made, all of your hard work really coming to fruition together because of the different efforts you put into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm like a new, you know, obviously because I'm a self-starter and I've been kind of doing this almost myself, you know, from the beginning, you know, when I was finally approached last year by Walmart Canada to do this, I had no idea where to start. Like they sent me, I'd never worked the process with Jet.com and PaperSource. PaperSource picked up one of our products. Onboarding with them was so simple. Like it, you know, I just filled out some stuff and they send me a PO, but onboarding with like corporate Walmart was a whole different beast. And I didn't even know where to start. It was one of the most harrowing experiences I've ever been through, you just don't have anybody to talk to. It's all online.
And they send you the, you know, the manual, which is a huge booklet that you have to kind of, you know, full of jargon you don't understand maybe. have to like decipher the code, but... Yeah. Well, kudos to you on all of that. You know, what do you wish you had known when you were starting in 2011?
Honestly, I think what I wish I had known when I was starting was that there are groups out there, like say PaperCamp, for example, there are groups out there that exist that could help you, but I didn't know where to look. I didn't know like who to ask. So if I was, say, approached by a store or something to carry my stuff, and they ask me these certain questions, like, can you send us a line sheet in this? And I'd say, sure. And then I'm immediately Googling, what is a line sheet? Like, I had to learn everything kind of along the way, which is good because that's pretty much the way I like to operate is if I don't know something, I'll definitely put the effort in to figure out what it is. But, you know, and that was like one of the things, like trying to navigate my way through onboarding with Walmart Canada. I think I was just so buried in trying to figure it out. I actually didn't reach out to my groups or whoever to help me, you know, wade through it. But that's, I think, the biggest thing that I wish I had known.
Well, what's next for you and all of your brands? What do you have coming up in the next few months?
Well, I've been working a lot on Modern Aid and really expanding the product line to outside of the Ramadan Eid market. I'd always offered products like, you know, you'll find birthday products and, you know, just products that say celebrate on them on our website. But as far as like the home goods, I added like some soft goods. This year, we're just kind of expanding more on that and putting out products that I, for example, could definitely see at, say, Anthropology or Urban Outfitters. Unfortunately, you know, as we all know, the world has been hit with this COVID-19 that has pretty much stopped a lot of things dead in its tracks. So I don't know where the future is going. I'm currently in the process right now of evaluating and trying to adapt to the situation that we're in. With everybody getting stay-at-home orders, that has put manufacturing obviously to a halt. My fulfillment center, luckily, is still operating because they also, you know, carry customers that are considered essential businesses. So they are still operating. That was my biggest concern. So that is something that I don't think anybody could have predicted would happen. But yeah, if your fulfillment center has to be forced to shut down, you're forced to shut down. So that was one thing that I felt like I dodged a bullet with, but 2 days later got the news that my manufacturing facility was shut down. So now it's trying to kind of navigate these like completely uncharted waters and figuring out like, okay, how are we going to adapt? We've got a season coming up. I don't even know if customers are in a mindset to buy. I'm not, but I don't know, maybe they are. I think everybody is just kind of taking each day by day. But I would say the biggest thing is, as a business owner, and I'm sure everybody goes through this, like we're all going to hit an obstacle that's going to make us want to just curl up in a ball and cry. And I definitely was there a few days ago. I just curled up in a ball and just cried. And I think it's more over the grief of your hard work not being able to be put out there, and not that, you know, oh, I can't feed my family. I can still feed my family. So, you know, I'm thankful for those blessings. But now my biggest thing is sitting down and saying, okay, so let's say I am not going to be able to leave and I can't rely on the outside world. What am I going to be able to put out there so that my business and my brand doesn't completely disappear until we regain some normalcy again? And that's where I'm at right now, is kind of figuring this out.
I'm sitting here shaking my head yes the whole way through, because I feel like, you know, I'm talking to a lot of people right now, and we're recording this at the end of March, and it's hard not to talk about this because it's such a huge impact in our world right now and our business too, of course. But I will say to you that I think it's a silver lining that your manufacturer, or that your fulfillment house, is still able to ship, and hopefully you've got some inventory there that they can sell through. And I know it's tough with the manufacturing being shut down too, but I applaud your optimism and how you're just looking at, you know, what can you do within your business? Because there is no roadmap here. There is no, okay, everybody do this and then everybody do this. It's really, everyone's circumstances are so different. What we're dealing with on a personal level as well as a business level is different.
I will say this, I think to any business owners listening, you know, this morning is literally what I was doing. I was like sitting down and trying to come up with an action plan of what I'm going to do. And I think now looking back, you know, and I've told the story of like how at the beginning I did everything. That's where we're back at again, where I have to do everything. And I'm actually grateful for that experience, because I'm like, you know what? If I started out and right away went to like, you're going to make this and you're going to make that and this guy's going to package for me, and I didn't know how to do anything at all, I would feel so clueless right now. But I'm taking it back to the roots. You know, we're going back to the basics, where everything's now put back in my lap and I have to do it. So I think if you are a business owner, I wouldn't always try to delegate everything out at the beginning. Really learn everything, like understand how to do everything on your own, and then delegate it out. Because we're all now learning this harsh reality that we could easily just be back to just ourselves again. And you're going to need to know how to adapt in that situation. So that's what that taught me. And now I'm like, okay, well, if we need to make a new product locally because the manufacturer is shut down, I know how to do that. You know, I know how to package it. I know how to barcode it. So, and I'll ship it out, and hopefully FedEx still operates and we'll be good.
Yeah, absolutely. We will adapt, right? We will figure out a way to get through this. It's not going to be ideal, and it's probably not going to be pretty at times.
It's not going to be pretty. No, it's definitely not going to be pretty.
But we will get through it.
I think the good news is everybody. You know, when everybody's not pretty, like everybody's hair is all messed up or whatever, there's less shame in that. So we're all in the same sweatpants, pajama situation. So we're okay.
Awesome. Well, where can people find you online to check out your products and all your different brands?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So my lifestyle blog is at ahappyblog.com. And my retail product is moderneed.com. And that's spelled moderneid.com. And then, of course, the parent company, if you want to call it, is pensesdesignstudio.com.
Awesome. We'll include that plus your social media handles in our show notes for everyone that wants to check it out. Of course. Thank you for your time today and for sharing your story with us, Jumana.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, friends, I hope you enjoyed that episode with Jemana. If you're interested in learning more about using fulfillment houses, manufacturing overseas, and scaling your product-based business, I encourage you to join me in my group coaching program called Proof to Product Labs. Labs is for any and all product-based businesses, not just stationary designers. And each month, we're tackling foundational building blocks for your business, things like marketing, tech tools, business models, and more. Head to prooftoproduct.com/labs to learn more and join us. Thanks so much for spending time with us today. Head on over to prooftoproduct.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover free resources to help you build your product-based business. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks again.